Blog Talk Radio.
Janice Graham, and we appreciate you being here with us tonight on this Saturday night after a big holiday for so many people. We certainly thank you for being here tonight at Our Common Ground. We're going to be talking about education in America and what it means, who it is, who's responsible, and we hope that you will stay with us here and join in this very important dialogue. Not many of you out there tonight. I didn't expect that you would. We did think about even canceling or postponing this important discussion. And we hope that you certainly will stay with us, because there are a lot of very, very important, issues that we need to talk to as a community, because education is not working in this country, and it's not working for not only our children, but it's not working for a lot of children. Before we get started, however, I want to take a look at some of the pressing news items. It's really interesting how cold our news is following a big weekend. A big holiday, I'm sorry. It seems like Tiger Woods is dominating the entire news cycle on today. And that's really, really interesting to see how that is panning out. Because one of the things that we don't want to have happen is that we don't keep up with what's going on. But there was an interesting news item that went on today, and that news item had to do with yesterday's Friday sales, and all of the news items that I've seen are saying that the Friday, Black Friday sales were very active, very aggressive, and that the stores did well. The stores did very well. And that's pretty good to hear that the stores did well. The stores did well on this Friday, because our economy really does need as much help as it possibly can. And I guess if that's one way of getting it, that's just one way of getting it. We want to thank Don for being with us tonight, and House Music Lover. The other news item that I do want to cover is that it seems as though the president is going to be sending in 9,000 troops after his speech on Tuesday. and we need to really sharpen our pencils and look at that map, because as you probably are aware, the president has already sent in 23,000 troops. So the math has got to be real, real careful. We have to be really, real careful. The other news item that caught my eye was the aggressiveness in which it seems that conservatives, the financial community, as well as the Republicans, are going after this president and this administration to get rid of Timothy Geithner, our Secretary of the our U.S. Treasurer. And it's really interesting. I'm beginning to think that perhaps one of the reasons that all of this is going on, they didn't care about what happened with previous U.S. treasurers. And I'm beginning to think that this has to do with how they're going to make an attempt to revise history on the back of Tim Geithner. So we've got to really watch that. So those are the couple of items that kind of like had a smell under my nose. It's really interesting how Tiger Woods' wife and her behavior over this supposed accident that was reported in the National Enquirer, which is reporting that the story was not reported accurately, that it was a matter of domestic violence, and they are promising, all of the news media outlets are promising to bring further news on that particular item. It's really, really interesting that we say that we are not consumed by race in this country, and a fight between a celebrity and his wife is getting so much play. But it does seem that Tiger Woods is dominating the news cycle today, and that it may very well be circumstances of domestic or intimate domestic violence involved, or domestic friction, or whatever, and we'll look and see that. Now tonight on Our Common Ground, we have gathered into this community dialogue to talk about how we begin to transform education in this country. It is clear that the idea of transformation is very, very important. It's not enough that we're going to be able at all to change things. We're going to actually transform it. And what I want to do is use an approach. None of us are educators. None of us are professional theorist around education and urban education policy. None of us are education policymakers or policy analysts, and we are not educators, but we are community, and education is an important ingredient in being a member of the community. So in our discussion, we want to approach it that way. The other is that we don't want to talk about education in terms of all the statistics. We know that our schools are failing, but schools are only one part of education, one part of the puzzle of educating not only our children but our community. Education happens in a number of places, and the question that I'm posing tonight is government, community, parents, students, where do we begin? What are the relationships? Home, school, community, parents, community, decision makers. There's the system. There are the decision makers within the system. There's local schools. There's local politics in regard to education. We will not try to answer the question why the schools are failing, but to try, very much so, to try to look at and engage in a discussion of where do we begin not to change what we have, because what we have is failing, what we have is not working, what we have is crumbling around us. But what is a new vision of how we can transform education? Because it is very clear that students going to school, whether it be higher education or public school or private school, cannot be well-rounded educational individuals unless they have parents and a community who are the same. So we're going to begin, and you might want to write down our number to call in and start this community dialogue is 347-838-9852. I'm Janice Graham. This is Our Common Ground on Blog Talk Radio, and we're going to begin right now to have this very important discussion that very well may be two or three shows.
This is Our Common Ground on Blog Talk Radio, Talking Race, in hope and with courage. Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you. Listening to Our Common Ground. Change will not be enough. Failure is not an option. Tonight, Our Common Ground, Transforming Education in America, a Community Dialogue, Our Common Ground, Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you. This is Our Common Ground on Blog Talk Radio, Talking Race. In hope and with courage. Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
I hope hope you can hear me. I'm having some technical difficulties, and I can't hear myself. Thank you for joining us on Our Common Ground. Our talk number is 347-838-9852, and we're talking about how we transform education in America. You know, one of the things I think that we have to begin with is asking ourselves the question, what is education? Where and how does it happen? Who is responsible? Many people will probably answer that question with the idea that it's parents, it's students. But I think there is a wider body of responsibility and obligation that has to do with the citizens in this country in regard to education. And the question of transformation, which is very different from change and reinvention, where and how do we begin? Why change is not enough is one of the things that I want to ask you to join me in talking about this issue. Write this down. Our number is 347-838-9852. It's really hard to do talk radio when you can't hear yourself, and I simply cannot hear myself. So I'm going to be checking in the chat room. I can see that Don and East Coast Sam and House Music Lover, Information Man, and Stephen C., Sexy Man, is with us here tonight to talk about the issue of how we transform. How do we begin? You know, one of the things that caught my eye is that Secretary of Education Arne Duncan and the former House Speaker Newt Gingrich and the civil rights leader Reverend Al Sharpton have been touring the country visiting classrooms and talking with students. And one of the things that I found is looking at that entire strategy really has to do with how narrow we think about education. You know, can someone in the chat room let me know whether you can hear me or not? Because I'm having a real problem whether I can be heard. Among the issues that I think that we need to talk about is to highlight education issues, and one of the things that Duncan, Gingrich, and Sharpton are trying to do is to highlight education issues and rally support for some proposed education reforms, which I have yet to understand. And a couple of weeks ago, they appeared on Meet the Press, and I was quite impressed about the way in which they were talking about education in a broader form. But they were discussing plans to improve the quality of education in this country, and I thought it was a very important discussion. But that more relevant issues needed to be presented. And the whole issue of education and the public discourse on education in this country has to be broader. Can someone let me know whether you hear me or not? Hello? I'm asking the question in the chat room whether people hear me or not, because it looks like perhaps we're not being broadcast for some reason. It looks to me like I'm being broadcast, but it doesn't feel like. Oh, thank you, Information Man, and hello to you out there on the West Coast. Thank you so much. And one of the things that I believe is that education and the public discourse on education has to be with more than teachers and school officials and educational officials, that it is a discourse. Excuse me, it is a discourse that must happen throughout the entire community. And among the issues that I think is interesting is what children have to say about their schools. But schools is only one place in which children are educated. And in a country where we are falling further and further behind, I believe that we have to see every place as an opportunity to extend the informal and formal education into an output that is much larger, much more important, and much more effective than we have now. So tonight we want to talk about what's the objective of education. How do governmental politics, labor politics, local politics impede our ability to reinvent or to transform? Because I really do think that change is not enough. It is most important. And this discussion must not be the only discussion, and we're probably going to be doing a series bringing some guests on. Because of the holiday, I tried not to bother. And I also think that we need to have a free flow of ideas. We need to vent exactly where we are in our community on the issue of education. And then we need to start formulating those ideas into a whole set of transformative strategies around education. That there is a race gap in educational achievement is not news. We're not going to debate that. Large numbers of our nation's children leave school with and without high school diplomas, barely able to read, barely able to write, and barely able to do some simple math. But the failure of the schools are not evenly distributed, and they are not singular in what we now know as a failure to educate our children. But one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I'd like to get your input on it, is what is education? What should our educational system be doing? What is the purpose of public education? Our number is 347-838-9852, and we'll take your call. I am hoping that you will give us a call and begin this dialogue, because this is a community dialogue. Yet we're living in a time in which politicians recognize that the public is deeply concerned about improving the quality of education. There could be no better time at which to raise these issues related to inequality and funding and the need to focus upon expanding educational opportunities as a way of reducing social inequities. And I believe that that is possible. Let me turn your attention to why talking about race and talking about education is important. Beverly Tatum is the president of Spelman College, and she had something to say about this. Take a look, listen to this.
I think that there are lots of opportunities to talk about race in homogeneous classrooms, whether they're all white classrooms or all black classrooms. And certainly black children use racially loaded language. You know, when they tease each other, for example, when someone accuses another kid of, quote, acting white, you know, you can interrogate that. Well, what exactly do you mean by that? You know, and if they say, well, because you talk a certain way or you do a certain thing, or, you know, often it's associated in school settings with academically focused behavior. You know, that to me gives a teacher an opportunity to really challenge the assumptions that black kids are making about who's academically successful and who's not, or who has a history of intellectual achievement and who does not. You know, there are lots of ways in which black kids, all of us, internalize stereotypes about people different from ourselves, but also people like ourselves. you know, and whether it's language about so-called, quote, good hair, or whether it's, you know, comments about skin color difference, or, you know, quote, acting white, there are many, many naturally occurring opportunities to talk about race in classrooms, regardless of the racial makeup.
And when Dr. Tatum was talking about this, I think she was also alluding to the notion that we must begin to think in a much more, in a wider spectrum of issues about education than ever before. Because the issues that of inequality, the issue of the race gap in this country, it's not going to go away until we begin to think about how we undo the problems of our schools. And here is Dr. Tatum talking about some of the best practices about anti-racism work with teachers and superintendents and decision makers, because they are part of the stakeholders and you are as well. If you'd like to join me in this conversation to add to this dimension of the issue of education transformation, our number again is 347-838-9852.
Well, I've heard Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, speak on a couple of occasions now, and one of the things that he often says is that we know what to do. The question is, do we have the will? In every community, there are schools that we might predict based on the demographics. Low-income children, you know, high-poverty schools, difficult family circumstances, all those things, and yet the children are successful. There are examples of that all over the country, you know, a school here, a school there. And if we look at what those best practices are, you could bring them to scale, you could invest in those best practices. And in the same way, I think one of the best practices is the kind of professional anti-racist, what I would call anti-racist professional development. And it seems to me if that is a best practice, we could offer incentives for people to engage in those kinds of best practices.
We at war. We at war with terrorism, racism, but most of all, we at war with trying to break me down.
You know, it's really interesting that in the same breath we talk about we have best practices in place around education in our schools. Dr. Tatum also talks about whether or not we have the national will. Kanye West talks about we are at war with ourselves, and we recognize that as well within our community. And at the same time, we have a president who talks about, yes, we can, except for our schools, except for we have probably the lowest level of educated populace in this country today than we have ever had. Cynthia Fordham, who is an anthropologist, last year studied a Washington, D.C. public high school and focused on how the hidden and explicit curriculum shapes student aspirations and achievements. And one of the questions that I have for you, What do you think when you're looking at your local schools, when you're looking at your children, when you're looking at your local community education,
I mean, I live in Boston. Boston is a real difficult place to look at, with the exception of the illiteracy rate in the city of Boston, with more than 63 in the city limits, with more than 63 colleges, universities, and community colleges, with the highest illiteracy rate in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So I have to look at the Fordham study of the Washington, D.C. Public high school and look at the focus on the explicit curriculum shapes and student aspirations and achievements and begin to think that there is some universal factors that come into play as we educate in our public square. Because, see, we don't just educate in schools. We educate in so many places. And none of those places are talking about reform. We have after-school programs, we have before-school programs, we have tutorial programs, we have educational programs in our community centers, in our churches, we have community endeavors in our sports programs, in our hospitals, and we still see that students of differing cultural, racial, and social backgrounds respond to the schooling experience, to the educational experiences differently. And I still pose for you, and our number is 347-838-9852, where we'll take your call. I still propose to you that the question are, who really are the educators in our nation? What really are the relationships? Who is responsible? And until we get to the answers to these questions, I don't think that we can begin to even have a dialogue about education, transforming education in America. Until we get to the issue of what kind of anti-racism work we're doing in our schools, with our educators, in our churches, with church educators, where our children and where our adults learn. You know, one of the things that has puzzled me is that very few systematic programs having to do with education has ever thought about, has ever reached back. You know, for instance, the first generation of seniors coming into integration were people who probably took what we understand as the traditional brunt of segregated and unequal schools. But there was no effort in this country to ensure that there was a proactive, protracted educational opportunities provided to them. So if you accept the premise that an educated parent is better able to prepare a student who is in the educational process, then we can be able to backtrack some or make some explanation about the racial gaps in our public schools. In the study of the Washington, D.C. High School, Dr. Fordham concluded that for African-American students, patterns of academic success and underachievement were a reflection of a process of resistance that enabled them to maintain their humanness in the face of a stigmatized racial identity. But I will guarantee you that Newt Gingrich, Reverend Al Sharpton, and Arnie Duncan are not having the discussion about those particular factors in looking at what they're going to be able to make recommendations to this president. She showed in her study that African-American adolescents have a profound ambivalence about the value and possibilities of school success. And it will take a transformation of our entire educational process to be able to combat that. I'm going to say that again, and I'm going to invite our listeners to call in and comment or speculate or provide a premise about the race gap and about the way in which we think about education in this country. I think it's so narrowly focused that we're never going to be able to, one, catch up for all American children, and two, to begin to rectify the dissonance, the disconnect that minority children have, and one of the factors for their failures in our educational systems. Our number is 347-838-9852, because if we don't begin to think about in a much broader term where the educational opportunities are, who is responsible for them, and what their relationship is to us, we will not be able to try to pull this gap together, and we'll never be able to actually be a better nation, have a better level of education in this country. We're going to go to area code 617. I'm Janice Graham. You're listening to Our Common Ground, and our number is 347-838-9852. Thank you, caller, for calling us. 617. Oh, God, what did I do? I'm so sorry. 617, I'm so sorry. I hate Blog Talk Radio. You guys know I hate Blog Talk Radio. Please give us a call back. I hung up on you, 347-838-9852. I am so sorry. Our number again is 347-838-9852. I'm navigating between two screens, and that is one of the difficulties. If we do not believe that we can broaden our thinking about what education is, who we are in relationship, whether we have students, and see, education not only happens in schools. It happens everywhere we are as adults. Children and students in classrooms are not the only party to education. And until we get that right, I think we're going to have a problem. 617, please call me back. The number is 347-838-9852, and you're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about transforming education in America. Thank you so much for calling me back. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
The number is 347-838.
617, are you with me? Hello?
Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about
617.
Thank you so much for calling me back. Please tell us your name and where
you're calling from.
Can you hear me? Hello?
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 Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Thank you for
Hello?
Calling. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hello? Hello?
617, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, I can.
Yes?
I can hear you.
Hello.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Kwame, calling from Boston.
Hello. 617, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yes, I can.
There's a feedback.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes,
I can hear you.
Okay, I'm Kwame, calling from Boston.
Kwame, thank you so much, my brother. Hotep. Oh, this thing tonight. Kwame?
How you doing, sister?
Kwame, are you still there? You've got to turn off.
Can you hear me?
You've got to turn off your speakers. You got to turn down your speakers and only listen on the phone.
Oh, you know what it is? I'm using my computer.
Okay. You still got to turn off your speakers down. Kwame, my brother Hotep, thank you so much for calling us. Yours is a very important voice, and I hope you've heard most of my comments.
Okay, yeah, I don't have a phone right now. I'm using my computer.
Okay, I can hear you. Do you have a headset on? Kwame?
Yeah, I don't have a phone right now.
Kwame, do you have a headset on?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me is the question.
No, I don't.
Do you have in order to call on your computer, you need
a headset. Is this
working?
No, I don't have a headset on.
Well, you need to call on the telephone in order to hear me, because you won't be able to hear me just by clicking on. You have to have a headset on. And yours is such an important voice.
No, I don't have a headset.
Kwame, you can't hear me because you don't have a headset on.
No, I can hear you fine. I have a speaker and mic in my computer.
Okay. Well, I can hear you fine. But as long as you don't have a headset on, it's going to be delayed. Why don't you give us your thoughts?
Well, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Why don't you give us your thoughts?
Oh, okay. Well, let me see if I can.
Why don't you?
I'll call you back.
Okay, call me on the phone. Our number here at Our Common Ground is 347-838-9852. And tonight we're talking about transforming, not changing, but transforming education in America. We're going to listen to this clip from the former superintendent of schools of Philadelphia.
Began to happen to health care because there are a large number of people in this country that are very tightly organized, and they can produce tens of thousands of emails and phone calls in a week's period of time. And if health care gets torpedoed completely, in my view, it's as much because of that as any other single thing that's going on right now. But related to education, there was another little blip on the screen at the same time. Some of you may remember that this president of ours had the audacity to want to speak to the school children of America. And what we saw in that week was a gigantic outpouring of sometimes vitriolic response to that. And what worries me about Duncan, what worries me about any time that those of us who are clear about what needs to happen with schools, if any of that should actually get traction sometime. And let me assure you, it does not yet have traction, the stuff that really needs to happen. If it ever gets traction, I fear that we will see the same thing occur with it that we saw with healthcare, and we don't have our act together. We can't deliver 50,000 emails and phone calls within a brief period of time. And until or unless we place ourselves in the position of a focus on the family, and we are able to mobilize in a similar fashion, we're going to have a very difficult time doing the hardest parts of the kind of school reform that needs to take place in this country.
And we have Kwame back with us. Thank you all for listening to Our Common Ground. Kwame, thank you so much for calling back, my brother. Kwame is calling from Boston. Kwame, you're on the air. Well, we'll
can you hear me now?
See if Kwame can connect with us.
Hello?
Because we're not hearing him at all.
Can you hear me?
We want to thank all of those of you who are with us. If you're a first-time listener at Our Common Ground, here we talk issues
can you hear me?
Vital to our community. We talk race in hope and with courage. And tonight we have with us Chicago Stepper out in Chicago who's listening to us. Thank you so much, my sister, for being with us. Doc Don, who's out in Oklahoma, East Coast Sam, who is always with us. Thank you so much. House Music Lover down there in Florida. Information Man in California. Nav, U.S. Talk, is with us. And Stephen C., from Atlanta, and Yard Jockey is with us. Thank you all so much for being with us. Our number tonight for you to call in and to give us your perspective about how we transform education in America, 347-838-9852. And we suggest that if you do not have headsets, don't try to click to talk because you'll be on a feed delay. We were talking before about what are some of the universal issues having to do with education in America, and I had cited a study that was done by a young African-American anthropologist in Washington, D.C., public school, Dr. Signethia Fordham, and one of the things that she found and concluded in that study that patterns of academic success and underachievement are a reflection of processes of resistance that enable minority children to maintain their humanness in the face of a stigmatized racial identity. She showed in the study that African-American adolescents profound ambivalence about the value and possibility of school success is manifest as both conformity and avoidance. And the ambivalence is manifested in students' motivation and interest. But the larger question for me, when we think about transforming education, is what is education exactly? What are the relationships between the school, the community, parents, community activists, decision makers, and politicians? And where does education actually happen? And are we thinking about education only in terms of educating children And at the higher education level, students, rather than thinking about educating our nation. And I think that that really is a big problem in this country. The other problem is how and how much courage are we going to have to talk about the issue of this race gap. Some might say conspiratorial failure experienced by Black and Hispanic children in this country. Let's listen to what Dr. Jawanza Kunjufu had to say.
Black men is as strong as a boy. The motive is white male supremacy. But before you get comfortable blaming somebody else, let me make sure we're clear. On a conspiracy, there would always be two. You see, you have the active conspirators and you have the passive conspirator. See, it's like child abuse. There were always two. You have the father who does the beating, active. But you have the mother who turns her back, passive. Isn't apathy, indifference, low expectations, buying hot goods in the black community, isn't that also part of a conspiracy? You have the active and you have the passive. In a conspiracy, there will always be two. Batting seventh, representing the media in this country.
Began to happen to healthcare. Because there are a large number of people in this country that are very tightly organized, and they can produce tens of thousands of emails and phone calls in a week's period of time. And if healthcare gets torpedoed completely, in my view, it's as much because of that as any other single thing that's going on right now. But related to education, there was another little blip on the screen at the same time. Some of you may remember that this president of ours had the audacity to want to speak to the school children of America. And what we saw in that week was a gigantic outpouring of sometimes vitriolic response to that. And what worries me about Duncan, what worries me about any time of that those of us who are clear about what needs to happen with schools, if any of that should actually get traction sometime. And let me assure you, it does not yet have traction, the stuff that really needs to happen. If it ever gets traction, I fear that we will see the same thing occur with it that we saw with healthcare, and we don't have our act together. We can't deliver 50,000 emails and phone calls within a brief period of time. And until or unless we place ourselves in the position of a focus on the family, and we are able to mobilize in a similar fashion, we're going to have a very difficult time doing the hardest parts of the kind of school reform that needs to take place in this country.
And, you know, one of the things, one of the big questions in this entire discussion is whether or not community activists, parents, decision makers, politicians, our White House, our Department of Education really has the will to talk about reform of education across the board, about teachers, about standards, about teaching methods, about teaching methodology, about educational goals and objectives. What are we educating our nation for? And we've really got to think through. You know, I love the idea that David Hornbeck, who is the author of choosing excellence in public school, where there's a will, there's a way. And the book talks about how race plays out in American classrooms. He is a former superintendent of schools in Philadelphia. And we have got to decide whether or not we are willing to play out the same notion, the same war, the same battles that we played out on health care. Here's some more that Dr. Hornbeck had to say.
There are four-year-olds. There are none that pretend to guarantee it to their three-year-olds, and that's not because we don't know to do it. Second thing, change the compensation and certification systems in our states for educators, not just teachers, for educators, so that we abandon our clinging to the accumulation of degrees and hours and courses as the path to certification. And in the case of compensation, we add to it how long you live, because it's longevity plus credit hours, and instead have certification on the one hand and compensation tied to what educators need to know and be able to do to create the learning conditions that kids need in order to meet the standards, as they say, that is what kids need to know and be able to do. We're perfectly willing to measure student performance against standards. We're nowhere near as close to measuring superintendents and principals and teachers against standards in...
It's clear that what he's saying is that we have got to do the battle with the labor unions and the policies and contractual agreements that they have made that are hurting our children, that are getting in the way. And I don't know how many of you are willing to be as robust. How many of us are willing to be as robust on the kinds of educational policy challenges and battles for reform? You know, our number is 347-838-9852. You're listening to Our Common Ground, and I hate Blog Talk Radio. I really do. One of the reasons that I'm not doing a show on a regularly scheduled basis is because you can never figure out whether it's going to work for you at all. I know that I really wanted to see if I could get Kwame Shabazz in on this conversation, because I know that he has written a lot about how this system works against children in our community in particular. Do you have any thoughts about it? Our number is 347-838. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls at 347-838-9852. I'm Janice Graham, and this is Our Common Ground. But before we take our break, we'll go to area code 773. You're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call. Would you give us your name and where you're calling from?
Nope. I'm not giving up my name. I want to be incognito here.
Alpha. Happy holiday. I think you missed that part where I was talking about the holiday and all.
I'm still full, okay?
I hope you enjoyed your family.
I'm still full, okay? I can,
okay.
I can barely talk, okay?
Okay.
I just want to call and you know, Janice, far be it from me to be the naysayer, to be the water on the fire. But listen to what you have just said. And I was late getting here. I've been here about 20 minutes now or something in that effect. But now you're talking about a community of people who have a serious depraved indifference about whether or not their own children learn. And that's not painting with a broad brush. I am simply saying that the majority of these parents are of the notion that they got their education, so they expect their children to do the right thing and get their education with very little guidance, with very little participation on their part. Most of the African-American parents are so involved or so engrossed in basically trying to make ends meet, that there is a serious disconnect with being actively participant in their child's education and how much that means and the system as it is set. We can't expect the people as a whole to come together to defeat a political system of pay to play. So at what point is it that we can expect that these parents are going to realize exactly what this system is doing to our children? They are not going to realize this. They are going to accept this, you know, with these blinders on. And that's what it seems to be, because there are so many success stories coming out of our community despite the conditions that as the system is gerrymandered, as it's set up. There are still people, children, becoming something in their lives. They are still being successful. And that is just with it. And I can't give it a percentage, but it appears to me to be anywhere from 85 to 90% of the children that are involved in this system will be lost in this system. And only a very few will fall through the cracks and become productive adults because they were about applying themselves and being educated because they had the parents who cared and who could participate in their education. And it's just such a clusterfuck of what white supremacy and this system has set up. The little clip you played and the gentleman saying that the rich and the people who don't want health care reform to go through have the means and the money and the financing to organize and stop it. And on the other side, we don't have those finances at our fingertips. So therefore, it has to be a grassroots effort. But I don't see it happening because too many of the adults with children in this system simply don't get it. They don't realize that they are in this system and this is a no-win situation. Because if it were laid out, if you could get all of the parents with children in this system to come into a room or into a hall or an auditorium, you'd simply have one big fight. Because there would be a level of ignorance in that room of what you are saying or what, you know, we're trying to, you know, articulate to them and what's really happening. And they simply won't get it, and they will simply go defensive and want to fight back as though the teacher is responsible fully for educating that child when the teacher is trying to educate, discipline, and keep order amongst the children. So
let me let me help you navigate. You're absolutely right, and the majority of the gap, the racial gap in educational achievement for children, comes out of homes where the same educational system failed the parent. Okay, racial images that are rooted in stereotypes which diminish the importance of intellectual pursuits really do limit the aspirations of black people. And when you place these issues within the broader context of race relations in American society, the causes of the racial achievement gap appear less complex and less mysterious. The gap is merely another reflection of the disparities in experiences and life chances for individuals from our community. But on the other hand, which is why I am suggesting that we have to really begin to think through this whole notion of what is education and who is responsible. You see what I'm saying?
I understand fully what you're saying. And you are absolutely right.
That we have got to think that education is everybody's experience and everybody's responsibility. The people who are parents now who fell through the same holes and loopholes and who were victimized by white supremacy, racial injustice, and inequality are people who ought to be also subject of some kind of educational transformation so that we don't have another generation of children who don't have academic achievement and academic support in their homes. But then there's another aspect of it, which is why I'm asking people to look at education in broader terms. And that is, we have institutions in our community that are also failing in their obligations and responsibilities in the educational process. And so we've got to see all these as prongs on a wheel that goes around. We suffer, Alpho. We suffer when we cannot and when we do not take up the gauntlet and the responsibilities as a community, as activists, as plain citizens. You don't have to be a parent to have a responsibility about education in America. That's what I'm saying, and that's why I'm saying we can't change what we have. We have to redo the whole thing. We have to regroup. We have to reconstitute our thinking about what is education and where it happens and to whom it happens. So let's broaden this and say, okay, the children of... Let's take just one example. The children of people, even if we just took the children of men who are in young African American men who are incarcerated, are we just going to let them languish from the same old problems?
Well, at that point, you know, the children of the incarcerated have to be in a position, someone must teach them with the importance, and that seems to be where we have a shortfall. No one is willing to reach these children at a very early age and impress upon them how important their education is, even though the system is flawed. As I said, there are success stories coming from this seriously flawed system. So if they can make it and achieve. That simply meant that someone was there for them. Someone impressed upon them how important education was. They followed through and they made sure that it happened. Now, when it comes to the single parent homes or the children of the incarcerated, that's going to take someone or something extra has to happen. Something has to step in and be that bridge to walk those children over to the side of education means everything. Right now, being educated, being smart is for geeks, punks. It's not cool. You ain't one of the fellas. You ain't one of the girls if you're smart. And in our community, that is too often the norm. Ignorance is accepted as though it were, you know, toys on Christmas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that just
that's
has
what
to
Fordham. That's what Fordham found in her study in Washington, in one of the public high schools in Washington, D.C. And one of the things I kind of remember that she had indicated that African-American students' pattern of academic success and underachievement are a reflection of processes of pattern of resistance that enables them to maintain their humanness in the face of a stigmatized racial identity. And one of the things that she noted is that those two concepts she had two quotes, and they were quotes taken from interviews with two African-American men, and the first was from a young lawyer who was employed in Washington, D.C., and who had been a National Merit finalist and whose test scores were among the top 2% in his state. So, we certainly recognize, again, that there are children where public schools are working for them. But that's despite some incredible odds. And one of the things that Dr. Tatum, who's the president of Spelman College, and Dr. Forgetting this man's name, Dr. David Hornbeck, had to say was that we're not looking at the best practices. We're not looking at best practices that we have before us. And why is that, Alpha?
Well, we're not looking at the best because the people who have that blueprint for what needs to be done are being summarily dismissed as just another idea that hasn't been, you know, the masses have labeled it unproven. And it'll only get attention if, let's say, someone of a different complexion raises that issue and are able to bring up the same. I guarantee you that if there was someone who brought that same issue to the forefront with the same documentation, and they were of a different race than an African American, it would be embraced. They use that as a stepping stone. It has you have always articulated the evils of, you know, white supremacy that we that we live amongst, mm-hmm. and how it affects us on a daily basis. This is no different.
Yeah. Alpha, can you hold for a minute?
Ignorant, they will.
I'm gonna go to 703. 703, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, and what is your name, please?
Hello, OCG. This is East Coast Sam.
East Coast Sam. So glad to have you join us. I've got Alpha on the line, and he's going to continue to make his point, but I want you to come in with your point as well.
Okay.
E.C. Sam, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I was out and about today, so I'm Sorry, I'll have to listen to the replay of your show today.
No, no, I didn't have a show today. It was.
Oh,
well,
then I did. Good, great.
It's holiday break time, but I had to call in. I had to, you know, participate in Janice's show because, you know, it is tantamount. I mean, it is. We have to support one another and stay together as a group, as a family. And I was basically speaking on the, you know, just the madness that is our public school system, this entire system that our children are involved in. Unless the parent takes an extraordinary step to put themselves right out front with their children, it seems that it'll, you know, the lives are being lost, the generations are being lost, even though there are some slipping through despite what we have.
Yeah.
And you know, Alpha, you know, when Janice asked about what's the definition, you remember how they always teach you, they say go back to the user. And I remember when I was growing up, they said, okay, you get a good education, and then you're able to get a good job. And as a kid, that's how I formed my ideas about education. You know, first of all, you had to get the education so you get the diploma so you didn't have to repeat the grade, right? So
exactly.
You kind of have to when you put yourself back in the situation of when you were the kid, does it change from generation to generation? What about this generation today? How do they see education? What is the value of education? How do they define education today?
Yeah.
It has lost a lot of its glimmer, a lot of its glow, because I don't see the youth of today embracing education as a necessity, as we did, as we were told, get a good education, get a good job. Finish high school or it'll be tough. Now that's not the case. You can't just, you know, lead with a high school diploma. Even having a college degree makes it it's still difficult. But that speaks to our political climate and what's happening to us politically. But
you're absolutely right.
As a child, we were told, get a good education and get a good job.
Right, and you need a good education to be a model citizen. And you understand.
Hmm? Yeah, that's another aspect of having an education. You know, when we think of it, East Coast Sam, in a broader way, rather than thinking about education is just about children, we need to think about education is about building the citizenry and the participation and the responsibility of our citizens in the
And
city.
I think that's failed across the board. You know,
You're
even for those
right.
who even for those who have received the quality education,
yep.
maybe through either public school or private schools or charter schools, because look at the ones who have went on and receive higher degrees and then go out into the corporate world, and you look at where America is today, and you say, well, what values were they taught in education?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with business. Somebody missed the business ethics course.
I'll give you an example, OCG. For example, Abe Poland. He passed away up here, and he was 85 years old. And when he died, and he had some sort of brain disorder. But when he helped the city, and I'm saying, you know, if you look at that older generation, the World War II generation, and how they looked at money and how they looked at education, instead of taking the taxpayers' money and having them build a Verizon Center downtown D.C., he used his own money. Now, if you look at owners that are younger, they're going to take the money and run. You know, it's about how much can I get out of the system. But you can see some of the older people, something they were taught when they were educated, along with the value system.
One of the things is that if you think about how much civics classes are no longer part of public education, if you think about team sports, for every student, how much of that is out of education, you can kind of see where the slippery slope starts. East Coast Sam and Alpha, I'm going to put you on hold and go to another caller, but I'm going to come back right back to you. Hold on for
okay.
a moment. Good evening, 248. You're on the air on Our Common Ground. What is your name and where are you calling from, please?
This is Nav, OCG.
Hey, Nav. How are you? Hope you had a nice holiday.
Well, I don't celebrate the holiday, but I did have a nice family gathering for
Yeah, I did, too. I don't celebrate Thanksgiving in the traditional American way or for the traditional American reasons. So what are you thinking about this education thing?
Well, you know, I want to comment on something that Alpha said, and I think a lot of times single parents get the short end of the stick because they're looked at as not putting forth enough effort to educate their children. And I know a lot of single people, and I've heard a lot of stories of single parents, whether male or female, that have made sacrifices and put their children through college, school, you know, whatever they need to do to make sure their kids got
mm-hmm,
the proper
mm-hmm.
education.
Yeah, yeah.
If you check the history, you'll see that there's
yeah.
quite a few.
I think it's very clear from all of the studies, and I don't know if you remember Dr. Antwi Acom, who was a guest on Our Common Ground, and he's written a lot about this issue of broadening our understanding and thinking of the racial issues in education. And it really does come down to whether or not parents were also the victim of the educational disparities in which we're talking about now.
Well, my point is that you have to look at the parent, okay? And I'll give you an example of myself. Now, I worked 3, 4, 5 jobs if I had to. I moved if I had to a better school district, you know, to make sure my daughter got the education she wanted,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I wanted for her. I didn't enjoy doing it, but I wasn't getting it where I was living, so I made the choice to move or do whatever I had to do to make sure that I'm able to provide and give my child the best education. Now, like I said, that wasn't easy, but I did it by myself. I raised her by myself financially, you know, physically, mentally. I did it all by myself, and my daughter always stayed on the honor roll. And because she stayed on the honor roll, that gave me even more incentive to do all that I can do to save up my money and invested in her for her education to the point where I was able to put her through a prestigious college, a 2-year program. I wanted her to go for 4, but she only wanted to go for 2. And she went, I don't know if you've ever heard of American Music and Dramatic Academy. She attended that, but the instructors were Juilliard instructors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not cheap.
Right.
I was
no
able
doubt.
To do that as a single parent,
yeah.
you know, and I saw the value in my child, and I decided to make the sacrifice. And my point is that's what we need to do as parents, whether single
yeah.
or married. We need to make the choice to sacrifice for our children, whether we had the education or whether we want the education. You know, we need to take the time and consider sacrificing for our children, and that's
yeah.
where I think we're lacking.
Yeah.
We shouldn't always have to depend on other people to help us. If we keep thinking that way, we're not going to go anyplace. We need more parents to make the sacrifice, period.
And we need more parents who understand the sacrifice to support parents who do not understand the sacrifice. Let's get a response from Alpha, and let's get a response from East Coast Sam to what you've had to say, Nav. Hold on. They're back.
Nav is absolutely correct. There, whether you are a single parent or whether you are, there are two parents, this has to be instilled in the child. And it's not all single parents, but it's far too many. It outweighs, it's the majority of single parents, and I simply say this, that these parents are so involved and so caught up in everyday grind of making ends meet, getting to work, getting back, and that they simply don't take the time, you know, with their child and instill the importance and make it a priority. And as I said, there it doesn't cover all single parents or couples, because even
does,
with a flawed system, we still have children
to
which.
Alpo, is this? It speaks to how we, as I began this program tonight, it speaks to how we think about education. If indeed education is important in this country, then one of the things that we have to do is to set up a structure where all people are able to participate for the success of their children. For instance, there is no reason why large employers shouldn't be required to give their the parents of especially public school students between kindergarten and 12th grade 10 hours a year of time called education leave or education whatever they want to call it. If we are in fact a country that wants to overcome the impediments to our underachievement as compared to other flourishing and nurturing educational systems in other countries. If you have a child in school, every other month you get to take off 3 hours from your job and your employer must pay you to see about your child. In France, if you have children under the age of 6, the employer is required to do reasonable accommodation to accommodate your child's school schedule. Go
well,
ahead,
OCG,
Sam.
OCG, and that speaks to a psyche. If you think about America, we're always under the thought of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, you get it the best way you can. And like you said, in France, they take a whole different attitude toward education.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have to acknowledge that bootstraps, the bootstrap requirement, East Coast Sam, is only required by some people.
Yes, yes, and I agree. And just like Nav said, you know, for every one Nav, there are five other that are falling through the crack. I'm talking about the parents; they fell through
mm-hmm.
the crack,
mm-hmm.
and so
like,
they don't.
Our biggest problem is
mm-hmm.
not single parents. Our biggest problem are people who got failed by the same school system who are now parents.
I agree with you 100%. And so you're saying we have to attack this structurally. And that's
we
where
have
I
to attack this. We can't keep doing the same thing that we're doing. We've got to do something different. For instance, this post-welfare bullcrap that goes on, I think that every parent who has children of school age from junior high school back, and they're getting financial assistance from the state, that if they don't have a high school diploma, that is the first thing that they should be required to do and not go out and get some of these crappy jobs that pay them nothing but to keep struggling for the rest of their lives. If you have parents who are in the educational process, then they also understand their students who are in the educational process. To me, that's community education.
So would you say, let's go back to the 60s and 70s, when you had the father out there earning the money and the mother staying at home doing the nurturing. And now we've went to, like NASA, she said she'd worked two or three jobs. And so some of that nurturing process, and I agree with you, where you need to allow parents to have time with their kids to help out. You know, the education system is behind. It hasn't caught up with the 21st century. You know, it has
exactly.
to change.
Exactly.
It's still stuck.
Exactly. One of the things that we've got to acknowledge, to Nav's point, is if you look at the high achievers in this country who are African American, if you look at the majority of high achievers, I'm talking about people like President Barack Obama, I'm talking about women like Susan Rice, I'm talking about women like Desiree Rogers, I'm talking about the Surgeon General, Regina Benjamin. If you look at the head of NASA, if you look at the current president of the Harvard Foundation, if you look at Charles Ogletree, if you look at all of those people, they came out of families, out of a single woman, single mother family. So, you know, and it is not about the single mother thing or a single parent. I mean, we have been fed this diet that one of the reasons that we have all the problems we have in our urban homes is because we have single parents. Well, you know, Black people have been single parenting forever. Because even when Black fathers were employed, many times they had to go away and be employed. So it is about a system that does not support the educational expectations and the output of education in our communities. It is about two or three generations of, when we talk about educational failure in the Black community, it is about the education failure of two or three generations. And you know East Coast Sam, you know Alpha, you know Nav, if you fail at something, you're not going to want to have it as part of your priority. So we've got three generations filled with parents who failed in the educational process, who are victims of developmental issues that were never corrected because they were crack babies and they were fetal alcohol syndrome babies, and those things were never addressed.
And so they failed, mm-hmm.
and now they can't support their children in the expectation. Nor can they support their children in academic by providing them academic support, because they're the three generations of illiteracy.
And OCG, you can look at other communities. Look at the Indian reservations. Look at Appalachia, the rural areas. It's the same thing happening there, too.
It's the same thing because, you know, it goes back to, we forget our history. And I think that when we're thinking about education, we also have to think about history. My biological mother, who I didn't live with, but I know, she went to the eighth grade. She was very smart, so she reads very well and has read for most of her life. But she went to the eighth grade because she grew up in a migrant farm family. And in the state of Florida, when she was growing up, if you didn't have money, you didn't go to school after the eighth grade because there were no public school facilities for Black children after the eighth grade. That was in my parents' generation. So we're dealing with some recent history. This is not about slavery. This is about recent history. And we haven't developed the strategies to really catch up. We have
brought up with children, with some generation, some children in the past generation since the 50s, but we have since the 40s, but we haven't caught up with the generation that needed to provide them the support for academic achievement.
Agreed.
And we haven't insisted upon the infrastructure. You know, let's, Alpha, I have to go to the churches. Nav, you know I have to go to the churches. I'm going to find a church one day. But
your
anyway,
point.
Until I find a church, it'll be the church of our common ground. And here we go.
Amen.
But there are some positive things going on, but they're so isolated.
They're isolated, and they don't get the support that they need from their own membership. There shouldn't be a school teacher who is African American who belongs to a school, or a black principal, or a black college student who shouldn't be participating in an academic tutoring program in their own church. That should not happen. And until we come to terms with this, and this is where, you know, we speak truthfulness at our common ground. This is the truthfulness about our responsibility to all of this. And the other is that we have allowed our schools, you know, someone wrote me today on my Facebook page and said, well, maybe we ought to privatize all the schools. And by the way, for all of you who are listening, if you'd like to tweet me, I'm Janice OCG on Twitter, and you can also check out my learning center at ourcommonground-talk.ning.com. But I'm also on Facebook, and I do a lot of talking back and forth about these issues on Facebook, and I have I made a movie about transforming education in America, providing some of the clips that you heard tonight. But we have got to continue to have this conversation. And I have placed an awful lot of videos, Dr. Naeem Akbar, Dr. Asa Hilliard, Minister Louis Farrakhan, Reverend Al Sharpton, Dr. Jawanza Kunjufu, Dr. Julius Wilson, on my Ning site to understand how we can begin to think about this issue in a much broader perspective than we're thinking about it. The question is, and I want to ask all three of you, and I'll go to East Coast Sam first, how much are we willing to commit and pledge to change? Not to just change, but to overthrow what we have because it's not working for all of our children. And your children, my children, you know, my granddaughter just made the Honor Society. My grandson can read anything and recall it exact by words. He has some kind of apocalyptic or something kind of memory. Those are children that we don't have to worry about. The children that Nav's children and Chicago Steppers' children or O'Henry's children, because every day we learn the message. The message is the way out, the way to fight back is education. But there are children in our community who don't get that message, who won't get that message, and the question is, are we committed to putting in the infrastructure, to overthrowing the system, and doing the political fight to make it happen? Let's go to East Coast Sam.
Well, it's kind of like, I was watching this movie, and I hate to use a movie as an example, but it was where these aliens were going to come and wipe out the earth, and they said because man wouldn't change. Man was going to destroy his planet.
Mm-hmm.
And when this alien was talking to this scientist, very educated person, he said that the only way you change is when you're on the precipice about failure. You mean when everything is going to fall apart. That's mm-hmm. when change comes about. It has to get so bad that you see that everything is going to fail that you're going to do right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're approaching that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's getting so bad in the United States where we're importing people from overseas to do mm-hmm. jobs that we haven't educated our own children to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now the population is fighting back. Well, they're getting these jobs, you know, these highly educated jobs. And then you know, that's part of today's discussion, you know, and the educated people that, knowing that they can't reach up there and get those degrees, they don't have those skill sets to do just those jobs that would just support a family. And I think, you know, we as a country, that's why we're having this discussion now.
We as a country won't suffer as much as African American and Latino people will. The other is, are you aware that there is a school in Seattle that does nothing but teach Indian, East Indians, how to speak American English?
No, I did not.
They teach them how to talk so that, colloquialisms, how to form words and phrases so they sound American. And these people come in from India for this class. They have them in India as well. And then we have an employment system that if a person sounds too African-American, then they don't get the job. Nobody says that, but we all know that that's true. There is a man that calls into Mark Thompson's show and GW show, who I absolutely love, and he calls himself Theopolis. And if anybody knows Theopolis, please
yes,
tell
do.
Him to please listen to Our Common Ground and call in. I have loved Theopolis for years. He will never get a job on the front rung, and we all know why.
But he has a lot of wisdom. He's very brilliant.
He is as brilliant as they come. But those are the kinds of things that we have to change. You know, I was thinking to myself, I wish that I could talk with Theopolis, because I could teach him the international phonetics alphabet, and
mm-hmm.
it would improve his, because he's always talking to me, he has a problem with his job. It would improve his regionalism. That's what it's called. Now, what say you about the commitment?
Well, I agree with everything you say. Excuse me. Right now, I do work. I play a minute part in the school district, but I do work in the school district at this present time, and I see a lot of the stuff that are going on that you were talking about. And what I would like to do, because I'm working on retiring, so what I would like to do is for the rest of my life, I would like to dedicate it to helping people that are less fortunate, mothers and children, you know, to move and think, change their thinking
mm-hmm.
toward a better way
mm-hmm.
of us solving this problem. And just like you said, first of all, a lot of times when you hear people speak, I mean, it's like, I'm like, oh, man, you know, and it's like, you know right off that those people aren't going to get a job, and people don't realize it, but a lot of times if you're not speaking properly, and it's not like you're trying to be anybody else, but because of the world that we're living in, we have to really think about how we're speaking when you're, you know, thinking about a career. Now, however you want to speak in your home, around your family and friends, that's one
mm-hmm.
thing. But when it comes to employment and career and jobs and things like that, you really have to work toward doing your best, and there's nothing wrong with it.
The question really is, do we have the political power and will to transform education in this country?
Well, yes, I think we do. I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't be transformed as of today. I mean, why is it taking this long? I've been in this country for, you know, over 30 years, since 1971.
Yep.
And I don't understand why the system is the way it is. I mean, it's beyond me. Yes, we have the ability to do it, but we have to, you know, take the step and start doing it. We talk, you know, we're a diary of words and constipation of actions, and we need to change that, and we can.
You're absolutely right. Now, thank you for your call, and we're going to do another show, but I've got to find another platform. This Blog Talk Radio thing not working for me. Thank you so much,
OCGs,
I
just want to add this. One time during my career, I always believed in, you know, in the communities that don't see successes that or a lot of successes, that you expose them to things at a young age where they see good, you know, like taking the kids out to a farm or taking them into businesses. And it's going to take more than just government. It's going to take business working with government to turn this whole thing around. But as a country, we have to say, what do we want? You know, do we want where do we want to be? It's almost like with JFK when he said, okay, we're going to go to the moon, and we work toward that goal. So the country has to set some goal and work toward it. And what I did, we went into poor neighborhood schools, and we brought them out and showed them things like a television studio. So this kid, maybe at second grade, he watched people in a studio showing how the cameramen worked and how they had the green room set up. And you have to have, at a young age, in those communities that don't see that type of thing, dream and say, well, here's what I want to be. But it goes almost all the way back to the three R's. You know, you got to teach them when they're young, before they get into the school system, you know, the reading, you know, the phonetics.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I see it. So I've been on those battle lines of trying to doing some good things. So I'm going to sign off. This was a very good conversation. Mm-hmm.
Good to talk with you. Hope you and your family had a good holiday.
Okay.
Take care, Sam.
Alpha, what say you?
You know, Janice, after the conversation that we're having here right now, and as you mentioned, the school that teaches the East Indians, that's the convenience store Indian, not the casino Indian.
Yes.
just as you said that, this political system, if you can change the politics of this nation, if you can change the approach that this nation has had to the least and the last, the less fortunate, those have not. It appears that the rich and wealthy have made it the objective to spend, pile up debt, and when there's a Democrat in power, rail on spending and debt so that none of these social programs can be helped, only hampered. And until we can change the political climate, until we can begin to hold these politicians accountable, we won't be able to change the system. We can continue to do what we are doing, and so many of us will fall through the cracks as an, you know, educational system. The masses will still be uneducated and left floundering, and those who slip through will slip through because of the due diligence of the parent, knowing the priority and the importance of an education.
Yeah.
And that's just the way I see it.
Well, thank you, Alpha, so much. We're going to continue this dialogue. If you'd like to call us and add your voice to it, our number here at Our Common Ground is 347-838-9852. Thank you, Alpha, from Chicago, so much. You know, it's really interesting that
if, in addition to policy, educational practices often have the effect of favoring privileged students and hindering the educational opportunities of poorer students, especially Black, African American, and Latino students generally. And it's particularly true with respect to the various strategies employed by schools to track and sort students on the basis of some measure. And we're going to have to be really careful about how we think about education in this country. It should not be just about students, just about what happens in our classrooms. It certainly ought to be about those things. It should certainly not just be about teachers. It should be about teachers, superintendents, as Alpha just pointed out to us. It should be about elected officials, and it should be about our Congress and how they are translating the educational needs of this country for all citizens, not just children. For all citizens, it should be a connecting of the knots, the dots, not the knots. It should be collecting of the haves and the have-nots. It should be the dots between social service and education. It should be the dots between politics and social service. It should be between leadership in our community. It should be between resources that citizens already have. It should be about parents. It should be about government. It should be about community. It should be about all of those things. We certainly thank you, Nav and East Coast Sam and Alpha, for your calls, and we thank Kwame Shabazz, who I'm going to have to get in touch with. Kwame Shabazz is probably one of the most highly active intellectual scholars. For those of you who do not know it, he's at Harvard School of Education. He hails from Atlanta. And I was really glad to see him as part of our audience tonight. Here are the questions. Who are the educators? Who must they be? They must be us. They must be parents. They must be the church. They must be our community centers. They must be TV and radio and all other forms of media. We must insist that the educational resources not in our community not only are equal, but they must be unequal, because our needs are greater, and the failure of the system, the outcome, has been greater for us in terms of what we suffer, what we lack, what we need. So we shouldn't be asking for equal education. We should be asking for unequal resources, more resources than other communities because of a history. So what is education to us? Perhaps if we teach and correct some of the illiteracy in our community, we will have more voters. Perhaps if we have more people who vote, we have more people who get involved in the political process. Perhaps if we have more people who are able to become part of the political process, then we will have better political leadership. And if we have better political leadership, more literate political leadership, then we will have better governing. These are all the dots. What in your, you know, and one of the things that we have to pay particular attention to is what is happening at the local level in regard to education. If you don't know who is on your local school board, if you don't know who your local superintendent is, if you don't know who your secretary of education or commissioner of education in your state is, then you don't know very much. You don't have much of the arsenal for education. If you don't know about this new secretary of education, you should learn more about him. If you don't understand what the White House is doing in regard to educational policy, all you have to do is go to the whitehouse.gov and you will know what this president's agenda is in regard to education. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on Our Common Ground tonight, Chicago Stepper, Doc Don in Oklahoma, East Coast Sam, especially for your call, House Music Lover, Information Man, thank you for your participation in the chat room at Blog Talk Radio, Kwame Shabazz, thank you so much for joining us, Nav, for your call, O. Henry, always for your support, and Stephen C., and for those who missed it at the beginning of the show this tonight, I did wish you all well and hope that you enjoyed your day off with your family to really begin to look around and think about the vast dimensions, the many dimensions of education in our country. There are bright spots, but there are gaping holes in regard to the education of our children, the education of our citizenry, and we need to look at the universal port in the middle of this wheel, and that is expectations. That is that we can only deal with what we have before us, and I think that we are the leaders that we have been looking for. I'm Janice Graham, and you've been listening to Our Common Ground. Thank you so very much, and we hope that we've given you something to think about here at Our Common Ground tonight, that you will begin to think about what is, what really is what we need for educating America. I'm Janice Graham, and again, thank you so much for being with us on this Blog Talk Radio edition of Our Common Ground.
If you are sincere about civil rights, then there is no greater civil rights issue in America today than education reform.
You're listening to Our Common Ground.
The black man is as strong as a boy. The motive is white male supremacy. But before you get comfortable blaming somebody else, let me make sure we're clear. On a conspiracy, there would always be two. You see, you have the active conspirators and you have the passive conspirators. See, it's like child abuse. There were always two. You have the father who does the beating, active. But you have the mother who turns her back, passive. Isn't apathy, indifference, low expectations, buying hot goods in the black community, isn't that also part of a conspiracy? You have the active and you have the passive. In a conspiracy, there will always be two. Batting seventh, representing the media in this country.
I think that there are lots of opportunities to talk about race in homogeneous classrooms, whether they're all white classrooms or all black classrooms. And certainly black children use racially loaded language. You know, when they tease each other, for example, when someone accuses another kid of, quote, acting white, you know, you can interrogate that. Well, what exactly do you mean by that? You know, when and if they say, well, because you talk a certain way or you do a certain thing, or, you know, often it's associated in school settings with academically focused behavior. You know, that to me gives a teacher an opportunity to really challenge the assumptions that black kids are making about who's academically successful and who's not, or who has a history of intellectual achievement and who does not. You know, there are lots of ways in which black kids, all of us, internalize stereotypes about people different from ourselves, but also people like ourselves, you know, and whether it's language about so-called, quote, good hair, or whether it's, you know, you know, comments about skin color difference, or, you know, quote, acting white. There are many, many naturally occurring opportunities to talk about race in classrooms. regardless of the racial makeup.
This is Our Common Ground on Blog Talk Radio, Talking Race. In hope and with courage.